Welcome to the second season of PMA Takes on Tech, the podcast that explores the problems, solutions, people, and ideas that are changing the future of the produce industry. I'm your host, Vani Estes, Vice President of Technology for the Produce Marketing Association, and I've spent years in the ag tech sector, so I can attest it's hard to navigate this ever-changing world. Thanks for joining us and for allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. As with season one, my goal is to outline a problem in the produce industry today and discuss several possible solutions that can be deployed now. This series of PMA Takes on Tech is made possible in part by the support of our sponsor, T.R. Taroni. For more than 35 years, T.R. Taroni has supported fruit growing and horticulture companies with a complete range of scientific instruments, including specialized harvest and quality control instruments to monitor fruit ripening, sugar concentration, temperature, and firmness. You can learn more about their complete range of measurement and control instruments at trtaroni.com. That's T-R-T-U-R-O-N-I.com. Today, I'm taking on one of the most talked about trends in production, regenerative ag. I'm interested in digging into this topic for my own education and my conflicted thoughts on the topic. I came into ag years ago developing biological controls and working on breeding techniques that would decrease inputs and be better for the environment. So given my decades in this space, I should be primed to jump on the regen train. What holds me back is some groups use it as a label with no data behind it. There's no question that soil health is important, that nutrient-dense foods grown on healthy soils are better for everyone. But where is the data that underpins those claims? How do we know that what is happening on the farm is resulting in the improvements requested by consumers? I'm talking to Tyler and Tim Nuss about their regen ag journey on Nuss Farms. The journey is different for every producer, but I wanted to hear about what they are doing, two guys deep into technology. One thing clear is that with Nuss Family Farms and many other producers transitioning to regen, they're responding to what the consumer wants. But they know they have to prove with data what they are doing on the farm will have the intended outcome of low-impact, climate-friendly farming. What is exciting to me is that we are developing the technology and tools to gather the data to support Regen Ag. More than ever before, we have these tools and the people to build and deploy them to put rigor around this trend. The other exciting piece is the business model innovation that Tim and Tyler will talk about. Producers are getting closer to consumers and delivering what they want. Let's jump into the conversation. I'm so excited to talk to you both. I can't imagine that anyone that's listening to this podcast that doesn't know about your podcast, The Modern Acre. Yours was the first ag podcast I listened to, and this was an inspiration for this podcast. I still listen to it every Tuesday morning on my run. I have you guys in my head. It's great. And you both have day jobs on top of that. Tyler at an electric truck SUV company, Rivian, and Tim at Appeal, which is a PMA member company focused on preventing food loss. But none of that is what I want to talk to you about today. You both grew up on your family farm in the Central Valley, a fifth generation farm that focuses on specialty crops. And you're both involved with your dad when you can. And also the farm is transitioning to regen ag. And so that's what I want to talk to you about. I don't know how you guys do all that stuff, plus two babies and dogs and families and everything else. It's pretty amazing. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having us, and thank you for the high praise of the podcast. Really appreciate you're one of our longest listeners, so we really appreciate that.
Well, no kidding. Like, I'm out running in the hills in the Bay Area at 5:30 in the morning with listening to, getting jazzed up on ag tech. So it's great.
That's awesome.
So tell us about the transition. Well, tell us a little bit about the Nuss family farm, and then go into a little about your transition to regen ag and why is that an important issue now?
Totally. No, we love talking about this topic, and thanks for having us on. This is Tyler. I think it's helpful to take a step back. Funny enough, the podcast really kind of ties into our journey to regenerative ag. As you mentioned, Tim and I, you know, represent fifth generation of our family's farm, and we grew up in and around agriculture, but we both decided that we wanted to go away from the farm. For me personally, it was just seeing the stress of being in a farming family, what that did to my dad and the stress it put on him and just the family. I always wanted to chart a different path. And so Tim and I both left the farm. I studied engineering, got into the tech industry, worked at Apple, and now I'm at an electric car startup, like you mentioned, Rivian. And Tim got into international business. So he actually got into the produce industry side of things and did...
Silly him.
Seriously, produce, right? And so his experience is in international trade, doing import-export, category management of fresh produce. And he most recently has been involved in a few ag tech startups himself. But a few years ago, Tim and I are, you know, always talking about entrepreneurship and bouncing ideas back and forth to each other. And we started just becoming more interested in the food and ag space and curious about what was happening back at the family farm. And so as we started, you know, researching what was happening in the industry, we felt like there wasn't a great place for the next generation to really learn and connect about what was happening in agriculture, right? And so that was where the idea of the podcast came from. And so we started it almost 3 years ago, interviewing people every week on or off the farm, founders, farmers, entrepreneurs, thought leaders in the industry. And so in parallel to learning and hosting this podcast, we became much more involved with our family's farm and the strategy and the operation, and talking to our dad more about where we were going as a family farm. And we started talking to these people on podcasts and learning more about this term called regenerative agriculture, which, like you've mentioned, it's been widely talked about, is quite a buzzword and quite polarizing. And we became really interested in it and how it could maybe impact and we could leverage it on our farm. And so around this time, about 2 years ago, our dad got into a major accident on the farm. It was an equipment malfunction, and he actually broke every rib in his body. And it was a very scary moment. He's fully recovered, but it was kind of a moment for us as a family to look at each other and be like, what are we doing here? what are we doing with the farm? We've farmed, for some context, on our current land for about 50 years. We've been doing vegetables, specialty crops, and farmed it conventionally. And so we had this moment as a family, what are we doing? Where are we going? In parallel, Tim and I are networking in the industry, learning more about regenerative agriculture. And that really catapulted us onto the journey we're at today and why it is important now. It was about a year and a half ago, we applied to be Kiss the Ground scholarship recipients with the Kiss the Ground scholarship program. And basically what they do is they help fund things like soil testing and educational resources. And that really set us off on a crazy last 18 months of jumping into our regenerative transition. So that's kind of the background and some context to how we got where we are now.
Oh, wow. I haven't heard of them. Who are they funded by, or where does the money come from?
So Kiss the Ground is actually a nonprofit. I would encourage anyone interested in the regenerative ag space. Kiss the Ground actually just released a pretty impressive documentary on Netflix called aptly titled Kiss the Ground. But it features a ton of celebrities, a lot of star power. Unfortunately, Tim and I did not get the nod on that. But it's an amazing documentary, just really highlighting regenerative agriculture, and you know, you could say what you want about the film, but I think ultimately it really, what it does well is bring consumers into the conversation about why this stuff is important. So I'd encourage people to check that out.
So what practices are you using and what are you changing? And from an operational point of view, what's different now on your farm than there was before you started down this path?
Yeah, this is Tim. It's definitely been a big culture shift for us on the farm of how we're applying the principles of regenerative agriculture. There's a lot of components that I'll talk through, but the kind of one of the most difficult ones to implement is livestock integration, especially here in California. Often livestock and fresh produce is decoupled in the food system, where it's very rare that you see an operation that has fruits and vegetables and also livestock. It's usually one or the other. So we've actually connected with a company called Pasture Bird, who we met via the podcast. We'd interviewed their founder a year or so back, but we're actually taking 100 acres out of conventional ag production and planting a permanent pasture. And on that pasture, we're going to be having pasture-raised poultry. So we're in the process of constructing very large coops that are autonomous and solar powered that every day rotate to a new piece of pasture. So it's almost incorporating pasture into our typical crop rotation. So that's been kind of one of the paramount first moves of us applying the regenerative principles.
In so you had to learn how to do that. I mean, that's a little different than almonds or vegetables, right?
Yeah, our dad has grown a lot of crops, but he's never grown a pasture. So it was a little bit of a trial and error. And I think that's one of the barriers to get into this space is there's so much unknowns where you've never grown a pasture. You're trying to select the right seed variety. And earlier this spring, when we were trying to plant the pasture, we selected the wrong seed and we got hot weather right after we planted and the crop didn't germinate. So we had to go and buy new seed and replant the pasture and add the cost into it. So we're definitely learning as we go, which has been fun.
And I understand you're going to, or you have moved into some branded products, communicating to the consumer about how the products were grown. How's that going? And is the consumer pulling the whole region ag movement through the supply chain? I mean, you talked about this movie. So is that, you know, are you educating the consumer and then expecting them to kind of pull this through, or how are you thinking about that?
I don't think we're quite there yet. I don't know if the consumer is pulling it through the supply chain quite yet. I think we, as a company, as a business, are bullish that it will, but I don't think we're quite there. What I think we're focused on is really developing the business. So, for context, most of our contracts today are with processors, right? So we're growing 100 acres or 200 acres of tomatoes or of sunflowers or of cucumbers, and in large part they're going to processors, right? So in the case of the tomatoes, it's going to a cannery being canned, or the cucumbers are going to get pickled. And so that's how our contracts are structured. So, you know, a few months ago, if Vani, you wanted to get some Nuss Farms produce, there wasn't really an avenue or a context by which to do that. And so what we've been really focused on is developing the business and trying to add some revenue channels to our existing business. So a few ways we're doing or thinking about that. One is, can we take our existing commodities or our existing high volume crops and go directly to food brands? And so there has been, we talked about consumers polling, which hasn't quite got there, but we were seeing a lot of food brands that are really interested, and they're bullish on this movement as well, about, you know, the focus on soil health, the focus on nutrient density. And so we've engaged in some discussions with different food brands that want to try to really optimize the supply chain and work directly with farmers. So we're seeing some of that, and we really want to approach that piece of the business as being a regenerative ingredient supplier. So that's one piece. But then, in, as far as, you know, getting closer to the consumer, we're also looking at that as well. We did a small trial of Row 7 Produce this year, which is a unique seed company that's focused on, instead of focusing on yield or glyphosate resistance, they're focusing on taste. It was developed by a chef, and they're really focused on nutrient density, on taste. And so we did a trial variety of a few different crops of squash, of peppers, of snow peas, and we're looking to distribute those in some unique ways. And it's albeit small, but a few examples is we started working with a local restaurant and doing shipments of our squash to them. We've also done produce box delivery, which is pretty exciting for us. And so that's actually happening right now. Anyone can go check us out and order a squash box, we like to call it. And it's a box of two different varieties of squash that'll be delivered on a weekly basis, delivered anywhere in the country, which has been super exciting to see, you know, as we ship those boxes out and print the shipping labels, seeing people from all over the country getting shipped Nuss Farms produce is pretty exciting and exhilarating, to be honest. So that's another area. And then the last one is we're also developing a consumer brand. So this is focused on shelf stable products. And I won't get into too many details because we're currently really in the middle of product development, but it's taking some of those row 7 crops and developing a product around it. And so we're the message of the brand is it's a regenerative brand focused on sourcing ingredients directly from regenerative farmers. And so the idea there is that we can communicate to the consumer the different practices that we're doing. Tim mentioned livestock. We're also incorporating cover crops and reducing tillage across the farm. And so we're working with Ray Archuleta, who's one of the leaders in the regen ag space, to help us with our cover crop mix and help us with how do we think about tillage. So one example is that on our tomatoes, on our cucumbers, on our sunflowers, we're going to be implementing cover crops on those fields, but we're going to leave a portion of them that we're actually not going to eliminate, but we're going to use a roller crimper and then no-till into that. So we're exploring some of these approaches and strategies, even with our current high volume commodities.
Wow. I have so many questions I want to ask. I'm trying to think of like, which direction do I want to go? One thing that I wonder about and just a lot of the practices that people are doing is really, as we try to define regenerative ag and as we try to define improving the soil, how are you judging? Like, what is the data that you're gathering and how are you measuring? And is that whole science starting to come about in the industry so that we can talk about it from a data-driven point of view and so that you can know how you're improving?
Yeah, that component of it is definitely still kind of in its infancy. There's a few main areas that we're focused on how we can provide and get better data. One is looking at carbon sequestration. That's kind of a big buzzy word that gets thrown around with regenerative and drawing down carbon into the soil. So there are companies kind of exploring that space, Nori being one of them. So still working through that. Also kind of soil testing and quantifying the increase in organic matter of the soil over time. And the last one being nutrient density. So really for us right now, we just really need to get an accurate baseline. So what we've done is done some pretty extensive soil testing across the ranch so we can really quantify how these practices are improving the soil over time.
And is that over years? I mean, how long will it take for you to start seeing one, really advantages in the soil, and then two, kind of advantages financially in farming this way?
Yeah, definitely looking at it annually right now as far as the soil testing goes. So we did our first kind of really extensive test this past fall, and we'll be followed up here before the end of the year. So we'll get kind of a year-over-year indicator of how things have gone this past year. But it really does take multiple years to kind of see the investment that you're making in the soil reap its benefits.
Yeah, just going back, I wanted to ask one more question about the branding. So I think that's really fascinating. And that, as you're learning, is a whole skill set of its own to brand and to sell and to, you know, be in that part of the supply chain. Not that I'm trying to develop your business model for you, but would you think about like buying things from other people that are growing using these techniques and moving them through your brand? Are you thinking about going that direction?
Yes, absolutely. So of course, to start, we're going to be the primary farm, just because we obviously, to your point, we need to develop the market, develop the brand. But that really is the goal. In fact, I'm working even on the product label design, and what we're going to do on every product is feature a farm that's one of the primary ingredient growers and call them out. So obviously, a little self-serving at first, it's just going to be Nest Farms, but yes, 100% in the future, we want to bring more farms into the brand and be able to highlight and showcase what they're doing on the farm.
Yeah, I think that's so great. And you've talked about this in some of your podcasts of just that doing that is so difficult and to ask, you know, small growers to do that whole piece is insane. So if you can build that muscle and build that capability and support other producers, that would just be fabulous for everybody, I think.
Yeah, we're super excited about it. I think it's really rare that there's a truly CPG company that starts at the farm level. It's typically companies that have an idea for the product and source backwards and find a distributor that makes the products that they want to put in their ingredients. So really kind of starting at the farm and working back that way, I think, is a unique approach.
So you guys talk to a lot of investors and are kind of involved in that whole community as well. So who's investing in this whole area of regen ag? And is it people looking at tools, looking at brands, looking at farms? Like where's the funding going to come from to help really launch this whole idea?
I think it's all of the above, and that's what I think is super exciting. We actually had an investor on the podcast this week, Lou Moorman, and he has a fund called Soil Works, and they're really focused on investing across the supply chain. I've talked to a number of different folks interested in the space, and I think a few companies that come to mind on the tool side is equipment providers. One is Greenfield Robotics. I think you know Clint. He's been on our podcast as well. He's developing robobots that go and do weeding. It's autonomous robots doing weeding, so you can farm without chemicals. So that's one example on the tool side. And then on the brand side, there's a ton of companies that are really looking at this space. A few are Patagonia Provisions. They're making a big play in the regenerative space. A few CPG brands, Simple Mills, Kettle and Fire are really pushing the regenerative story, and Planet Forward as well, which is Julia Collins' startup. There's kind of a two-in-one. They're developing a platform to connect farmers and brands, but they're also developing a brand of their own. So I know they're doing well. And lastly, on the farm side, I think, you know, it's a little simpler to invest in a company or an ag tech startup or even a CPG company. But on the farm side, I think it's really being developed right now. And I think there's a great podcast, Investing in Regenerative Agriculture, where the host Cone really dives deep into this space and about what does it look like to invest in a farm and how can that work for both the farmer and the investor. And there's different people looking at the transition finance space. MAD Agriculture is a great example of a company that's focused on helping fund farmers' transitions with really business-friendly loans. I know Replant Capital just launched a new fund that's focused on this as well. So I think a lot of really exciting things. But what I love about the regenerative space is it really is the Wild West right now, and there's so much opportunity to optimize the tools, to invest in brands, to really, most importantly, focus on the farmer.
So are you, a lot of people when they're talking about Regen Ag start moving into talking about carbon credits and how that might be part of the business model. Are you getting any carbon credits, or is that part of your business model, and how are you working with that?
Not yet. We're definitely keeping it on the radar, but it's not something we're banking on as far as our business model and plan for the near term. I think is going to be a nice to have in the future as that system gets more developed and standardized.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be interesting to watch to see how that moves forward, because it'd be great for people to have that source of income, you know, while they're doing the transition.
Totally.
So Regen Ag is more about getting a particular positive outcome from improving your practices, whereas organic standards are more of a playbook following specific rules. How do you think both the farmer and the consumer response is going to play out with these two?
Oh man, you're not holding anything back, Vonnie.
You guys have all the answers, right? You have to sit in the hot seat this time.
Seriously, man. Whoa. In all seriousness, I mean, it's something that Tim and I talk quite a lot about. I think let's start with organic. I think the founding of organic principles, I think, came from an incredibly sincere place and an authentic place. And it was really a commitment to focusing on the crop and growing it in the best way possible. Unfortunately, what Tim has seen a lot in his career, and we've both seen, and I'm sure you've seen, is because it has become, like you said, a playbook of specific rules, I think what we've seen at scale is that be manipulated, right? And it really not coming down to what it was originally intended for. An example is you can have a huge high volume organic production that tills the soil, that uses an incredible amount of chemicals, albeit organic certified chemicals, but still chemicals, and really not have a focus or a care for one, the environment and the soil, and two, for nutrient density, right? And so I think what we're going to see is I'm really bullish on those two points of regenerative agriculture. It's a focus on the soil and by extension, the environment, and also on nutrient density. And I think consumers are going to be more and more interested in this space. Brands are going to be more and more interested in telling that story and differentiating themselves. And organic doesn't really solve for that. And I think regenerative is able to actually put the focus on those two areas.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think the organic bucket for so many years was just a very easy way for people to feel good about. They didn't really understand what was going on the farm. It's like, okay, it's organic, so I'm doing the right thing for my body, my family, and for the environment. And I think, like you said, it started that way. And I think there still are, you know, great people doing organic things. But I think we're learning so much about that using, you know, a little bit of herbicide is better than tilling. And there's just practices that they're using a balance and kind of understanding what's affecting what in the soil and in the environment. It's more complex than just putting an organic label on it, which, you know, nothing negative against that. But I think we're able now to understand more, you know, partly with some of the data tools that we have to understand what's going on. So I really look forward to seeing how that kind of plays out both on the farm and with consumers as they understand it better.
Totally. I think just to add quickly is we're trying to take a really broad approach and parallel pathing things. So we currently actually have 100 acres in transition to organic with the goal to be certified regenerative organic, which is an upcoming certification. So I think we're looking
even harder, I'm sure.
totally, without a doubt. But I think we're looking at all these areas of opportunity, right? We mentioned carbon credits, nutrient density, some of these certifications, and we're really trying to evaluate and be open to all options, because what you said at the top, right, is are we ultimately going to get a pull from consumers? And that's what's important. So we want to be prepared regardless of what happens.
So my last question, it's another softball, easy one. So in my view, region ag as a term is both polarizing, just saying, okay, if you're not doing region ag, what are you doing, you know, degen ag? So it's just the term is almost polarizing, and there's been a lot of hype. How do we move away from the emotionally charged debate on semantics and also give it a science-based foundation that will make more farms willing to give it a try?
Yeah, this is a fun one that Tyler and I talk about as well. It's definitely become very buzzy, where every week you see a new article about so-and-so company that's becoming regenerative. I think Walmart is now a regenerative company. But in all seriousness, I think really farmers often use this kind of debate as an excuse not to give it a try and say it's not working. But I think we really need early adopting farms like ours to figure this out and solve the problems. Cause I think to really scale this, it's going to take people to jump in and take some risks and really learn by doing.
Yeah. Well, guys, thank you so much. This is so fun to have you on that side of the microphone and get to ask you questions. And I really continue to enjoy to listen to your podcast, and thanks for coming and talking about your experience. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, likewise, Vani. We love what you're up to with this podcast, and we really appreciate you having us on.
I love talking to those guys. I suggest you check out the Modern Acre podcast and also information on Nuss Farms. Next, I will be talking to Praveen Penmetsa, CEO of Monarch Tractor. Monarch Tractor is one of those tool companies enabling Regen Ag. I love listening to Praveen talk about a tractor as a platform, but you will agree it makes sense. He has turned the compact tractor into a data hub as a next generation tool. So tell me about your company.
Yeah. So my company is Monarch Tractor that I'm the CEO of. Our whole mission statement is, how do we advance clean farming? With that in mind, we have built an all-electric driver-optional tractor that works as a data hub. It's basically a compact tractor in the 40 to 70 horsepower class just to kind of segment our product.
Great. So we were talking a little bit before, and you were telling me a little bit about your background. And so you're a tech guy. Like, how did you end up here?
Yeah, I started off as a mechanical engineer working on things like electric cars and battery systems back in the early 2000s, when those things were still research projects. And this was all before even Tesla existed as a company. And what I was just tired of working on these research projects that were not getting to market. So I started a company called Motivo Engineering, which was all about electric cars, electric boats, electric planes. We did battery systems, and amazing consumer-facing products like that. And along the journey, we came across this grand challenge from USAID called Powering Agriculture. Basically, it was a call to action saying agriculture over the world needs energy, a lot of it, whether it's in the form of diesel or nutrients, fertilizers, you name it. And how do we kind of do this sustainably? So as a part of that, we kind of developed an electric tractor kind of a solution. And that was my introduction to agriculture. Actually, let me rephrase that. That was my reintroduction to agriculture, because I come from a farming family. You know, my dad still has rice fields out in our village. But I would be lying if I said I know anything about rice farming. but with that introduction into powering agriculture, we kind of developed an electric tractor solution that was the genesis for Monarch Tractor today. And also that electric tractor then brought me back to California. And then I started looking at all the US farmer challenges in my previous company. And we started working on a lot of technology solutions like for planting automation, harvesting automation, cultivating robots, et cetera. And while we were doing that, we realized that between this electric tractor that we had and these robots that we were deploying, there was a big gap. Farmers basically did not have a platform, and these custom robots are not viable or scalable on a global scale. So the thought process was, if we can develop a next generation tractor platform, one that is sustainable in the form of being all electric, one that it, you know, helps by being automated so that it can solve the labor problem, but also provide a hub for all of these new generation of technologies that are coming in and act as a bridge between the old implements and the next generation of smart implements, then that would really kickstart the digital transformation of farming. So I said, okay, that's great. And that's when I reached out to a couple of my friends, and together we formed Monarch Tractor, which is myself, Carlo Mondavi from the famous Mondavi wine family, Mark Schwager, who's from Tesla Manufacturing, and Dr. Zachary Omohundro, who he and I have now worked on 3 companies together. He brings the technology side. So the 4 of us started Monarch Tractor to build this next generation tractor and make it available to farmers today.
Wow, that sounds like a great group. So how is that different than what John Deere is doing? Like, I see all sorts of advertisements by them. You know, they have all these dashboards. And so what is what you're doing as, and it's interesting, you can tell you're a tech guy because you talk about it as a platform. That's a tractor as platform. So how is it different than what other people are doing?
Yeah. So it's completely different in the sense, number one, we reimagined the tractor from the ground up, and we are building a compact tractor. So like I said, it's a 40 horsepower tractor. It's the kind of small tractor that you see all over the world, not just a harvesting combine that you see when you look at these big ads that that agriculture equipment companies have. So it's still a tractor. Number one, it's a small tractor. And into that small tractor, we have made it electric, we have made it driver optional, and we have made it have all the capabilities of a data hub. So nobody right now is focusing on the compact tractor, Wani, which we think is a big gap, right? And amazingly, the compact tractor is the most commonly used mechanization tool in global farming. So 1.4 million of these compact tractors are sold every year globally, which is amazing, right? And they're also the most utilized common mechanization tool in farming. So that's the, it's also called a utility tractor. And you'll see it in every farm has at least a few of these. They use it for like, you know, attaching it to a trailer, moving some stuff around. It's the most common tool. But it's treated as a commodity tool with low margins. So none of the big ag equipment companies focus on the compact tractor. So what we said is if we can actually transform this compact tractor and make it a next generation tool, now suddenly it's a tool that a global farmer can use. And whether it's a farmer in Japan, whether it's a farmer in India, Asia, Africa, Europe, or America. Amazingly, we started off on this journey 4 years ago, and interestingly, the market is coming to us. Compact tractors in America this year are seeing an 18% year-on-year growth. And that's a part of also what's happening is the food ecosystem, like you know, is going more towards regenerative practices, smaller farm sizes, you know, more operations, which now need to be done in a sustainable manner. So all of that is driving more compact tractor usage. So we decided that we should basically take that compact tractor, really make it a next generation tool.
Yeah, that's what got me interested in talking to you earlier in this podcast. I talked to the Modern Acre guys about what they're doing on the Nuss family farm. And I asked them, who could I talk to that's involved in Regen Ag that they have worked with? And they suggested that I get in touch with you. So how are you involved and how do you tie yourself to the Regen Ag movement?
Yeah, that's a great point, right? And Nuss Farms is a great example of our archetypical farmer that we think of and we say, who is going to buy our tractor and who are we kind of targeting? So these farmers now want to change their practices, which often requires them to spend more time out in the field. And, you know, you talk to Tim and Tyler and you know that time out in the field comes at a cost. It's a lot of effort. Also fairly dangerous. I mean, you heard the story about how, you know, their dad was injured operating one of the farm equipment pieces, and agriculture is, you know, the third most dangerous industry after construction and mining. So more practices, more time in the field comes with a cost, both on the dollars and cents side and on the time side. So, and how do you do more in a sustainable manner? So that you're not adding to the emissions challenges while you're trying to take care of the soil health. So those are the three challenges, Vani, that we're hearing from people like Tim and Tyler. So that started us off when we started fashioning our Monarch tractor by saying, let's make it all electric so that one, we are not adding to the emissions by doing more. Let's make it driver optional and put some smart sensor technologies into this compact tractor so that we can make it safer for the driver. And also maybe after they do the practice once, we can remove them from the driver's seat so that they're not stuck on a mundane activity at 3 a.m. in the morning. And then the third one is the informational piece. You know, how can we kind of allow this? Tim and Tyler, for example, talked about the journey that they went on in terms of learning about these new things that they needed to do. So how can we make a tractor that with our sensors, cameras, and the micro weather station that we have there, provide them the data and the insights to accelerate that journey on their side and going to regenerative practices. They talked about, like, for the first time, right, they had to like kind of, grow a prairie to feed their livestock.
Feed the chickens, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, how can we kind of do that with the livestock? And how can we help them? And our sensors can give them the information in not just capturing it, but also if you have that, and that's why, you know, I'm still a tech guy at heart, I guess. Mm-hmm. I like to use the word the platform. Mm-hmm. Allows us to now have a channel back to them of providing some insights on, hey, if you're doing this, think about this, right? And oh, by the way, in real time, because you and I know farming is very reactionary, right? It's 50% in fruits and veggies is planning, the other 50% you react. You know, if we are in commodity crops, like where the other big ag equipment companies are, it's more 80-90% can be automated. That's why you see the screens. That's why you see the big combines. And they always show you it's corn, soy, wheat, cotton. Mm-hmm. those are 80-90% planned and 10% you react. But when it comes to people like Tim, Tyler, all the fruits and vegetable people, it's 50% planned, 50% react. So our tool also helps them not only on the journey of of learning from new practices, but also react faster without having them be out in the middle of the field day in and day out, night and day. So that's the magical combination we see is all electric plus automation plus data, all in a very accessible, quote unquote, common platform. The tractor is the magic. So that's why our name of the company is not Monarch Data, Monarch AgTech, it's Monarch Tractor, right? So we feel very strongly about the product and making sure that it fits the needs of the farmer today, not some futuristic product that's going to solve some data problem, in the cloud. So
that's what I love about this so much. And I pressed Tim and Tyler on this as well, is that we really need to have tools to be able to move towards Regen Ag and know what we're doing and make better decisions and make better reactions. And I think that's been kind of missing. And so then people think about Regen Ag as, something that's not science data-based. Yeah. And it is very much science and data-based. And so yeah. I love hearing about you developing this platform in the form of a tractor that can actually go out and help farmers with that.
I hope you enjoyed this dive into Regen Ag. There are as many aspects and ways to talk about Regen Ag as there are farms. We heard a specific example of how Nuss Farms is using data and changing practices to develop a new business model to deliver what the consumer wants. I wish them the best of luck. As an industry, we don't know exactly how to implement Regen Ag practices for all farms globally, and things don't always go as planned. As I like to say, it's biology, and for now, does not always do what we expect. We need to be comfortable with the gray area. There is capital from both inside and outside the industry interested in building new tools for more precision, better analysis, and great outcomes for the farm, the environment, and the consumer. I'm excited to see where it goes. That's it for this episode of PMA Takes on Tech. Thanks for allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. Be sure to check out all of our episodes at pma.com and wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe, and I would love to get any comments or suggestions on what you might want me to take on. For now, stay safe and eat your fruits and vegetables, and we'll see you next time.